Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 577, Mia Saini Dutchanowski, co-founder of Oars and Alps.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life. Welcome to So Money.
Welcome to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. A couple months ago, I purchased a gift for my husband for Valentine's Day, and it was a little set from this company called Oars and Alps, which had some deodorant and some aftershave and some face lotion. Oars and Alps is a men's athleisure and natural grooming brand. I discovered them on Facebook because that seems to be where I learn about everything these days, for better or worse. The brand, little did I know, was created by someone I know. And that person is our guest today on So Money, Mia Saini Dutchanowski. Her company, which she co-founded with her friend, Laura Lazowski, has been dubbed the Warby Parker of men's grooming. And it was created after Mia and Laura won the regional 2016 Harvard Business School New Venture Challenge. They then spent a year in research and development, and voila, Oars and Alps was born. And all the while, I didn't know the brainchild behind this product was my old colleague, Mia. She and I worked at thestreet.com. We sat across from each other during the market's downfall, big downfall in 2009. She was an intern and was actually contemplating leaving Harvard Business School to pursue a career in financial news as a correspondent. I thought that was a crazy move, but that's Mia. She makes bold decisions. And she made that transition and guess what? Went on to become a very successful reporter and anchor at Forbes and then Bloomberg TV, covering the global financial markets. She's pivoted since then as well, launching now into the world of entrepreneurship. And the idea for Oars and Alps, she explains, grew out of a personal necessity. Both Mia and her co-founders' husbands just needed better products to help with their sensitive skin. In our conversation, we talk about how Mia and her co-founder, Laura, took advantage of being outsiders to the skincare world. You know, neither of them had any experience in this industry, but naivete can be an asset, Mia says. Also, the marketing psychology behind getting men to care and spend money on grooming products, and why Mia insists on keeping her financial accounts separate from her husband's. I mean, they've been married for a while. They have three kids. But she says, I don't want to be the beneficiary of someone else's hard work. We'll dive deeper into that. Here we go. Here's Mia Saini. Mia, welcome to So Money, old friend. It's good to reconnect with you on the podcast, and congratulations.
Hi, thank you so much. I know it's been a while. You and I first got together, I guess, back in 2009.
Yep, at thestreet.com, where it all began for many of us. And you have pivoted beautifully a couple of times since then, at least. You've went on to become a major reporter for Bloomberg and then now the co-founder of a wonderful company, which I want to share with everybody on the show, called Oars and Alps. But let's catch up a little bit. I mean, it's been 9 years. you went from reporting to entrepreneurship. Let's talk a little broadly about that pivot. What kind of inspired you to do that?
I think it goes back to kind of what has always been the root of why I do most things, which is I'm super curious and I love to solve problems. I'm an engineer by training and I never settle with just a normal answer for things. I like to dig deep. I like to investigate. So that was part of what drove me to be in, you know, a financial on-air correspondent covering business news. It was right after the financial crisis. I was on the trading floor actually at Goldman Sachs at the time. And I remember thinking, wow, there are a lot of people on TV who are doing a very big disservice. They're not presenting all the facts. And there's a lot more digging that needs to be done to kind of explain to people, you know, why is it that they lost all of their savings? Or what is this thing called a mortgage-backed security? And why is it at the kind of crutch of what's happening in the economy? And I wanted to do that digging. And I think that is the same reason why I pivoted from being, you know, an investigative on-air journalist to starting my company. You do a lot of investigating. And at the end of the day, you're doing really problem solving. You identify a problem in the market. In our case, it was men's skincare was an awful experience, not personalized, overwhelming. And I wanted to solve that for people who just didn't like shopping in that traditional retail environment. And so that's kind of in a nutshell explains why I made that pivot.
In some ways, too, Not knowing a whole lot about your day-to-day currently, although maybe we'll get into it, you can give us a snapshot of how, you know, how busy your life is now. But as an investigative reporter, you are beholden to someone else's schedule. And now I know you are a mom of three, you're married. I'm sure that takes a lot of precedence in your daily priorities. Has the shift to entrepreneurship allowed you, afforded you a little bit more flexibility and autonomy in your schedule? Or no, you're just beholden to your kids now?
Well, none. I actually, I work on Oars and Alps nonstop. You know, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, as much as I love my kids, like my main focus is, you know, I've always been very focused on myself. I know this sounds bad. Like I love, it drives me. I'm a better mom because I'm so focused on something that's not my children.
I get it.
And I'm obsessed with creating the best company. I'm obsessed with growing it as fast as I can. And similarly, when I was an on-air reporter, where I was, as you mentioned, I had morning hours. So I was up at, you know, 4:30 in the morning. I did come home at 2. At that point, I think I had two kids maybe. I had a lot more flexibility in that schedule because I know no one really needed me at 3:30 in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I could do whatever I needed to do with my kids. But now it's, gosh, like I've got meetings, I've got investors, I've got customers who all need a piece of my time. And my kids are young, and I will tell you, and I will preface all of this, that I wouldn't be able to do any of this if I didn't have a good team helping me. So I've got, you know, I've got some amazing people who kind of help me make sure that, you know, everything kind of runs smoothly. And it, of course, never runs smoothly, but at least I've got people I trust.
Right. Well, let's talk about Oars and Alps with more specificity. I know it's a men's athleisure and natural grooming brand. You have a lot of experience, as you said, as an engineer, as a reporter. You went to MIT and you were at Harvard Business School, right, for a while, or maybe I'm...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So clearly you have the resume for starting a business. But let's be honest, Oars and Alps, a men's grooming company, a men's grooming brand. And you didn't bring to the table any kind of knowledge of that industry, and neither did your business partner, Laura. So how are you taking advantage of maybe being an outsider?
Yeah, that's great. You're right. Like, so what's clearly missing from my resume is I'm not an esthetician. You know, I didn't work at L'Oreal. I have no brand or beauty background. What I bring to the table is a clear and new perspective, a new way to do things. And I think because I was initially naive starting, I think that was my best asset in helping me have some of those conversations. I was able to talk to people, talk to customers, talk to folk people in focus groups, talk to some of the biggest skincare manufacturers and say, why is it done this way? Like, why don't we do it this way? And because I was initially naive, it really kind of helped facilitate these kind of really true and raw conversations. If I had been colored or tainted or had those like rose tinted glasses going into it, I think it would not have allowed me to bring a level of innovation and creativity to this industry.
Interesting. And what are some of the crazy things you're learning about men and grooming? Because the perception is that men don't want to spend a lot on grooming. It's taken me years to get my husband just to use like a really good face wash.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And as you kind of rightly pointed out, you are the one who was kind of prodding him to take better care of his skin. And one of our biggest insights is, and one of the reasons I started Oars and Alps with my partner, Laura Lasowski, is because being on camera, I had access to some of the best skincare products. And my husband sounds like he's kind of like your husband. He's not like, you know, your average Joe, but he's not like super vain and metrosexual. He was borrowing all my products, whether it was, my eye cream or my moisturizer or like, there goes my body wash. And it was expensive. I had to replenish my products faster. And I realized that a scientist in me knew that men and women have different types of skin. Men's skin is oilier, thicker, coarser, more prone to ingrown hairs and breakouts. So fundamentally, they need to use products suited for their skin. Also, they don't like shopping. But the biggest thing I learned was that most women play this role of gatekeeper to their husband's skin, whether it's their facial skin or their on their body. They play a huge role in either introducing products or influencing them to buy a certain product. You'll be super surprised, Farnoosh. 95% of our customers are men. That is men putting their credit card information and pulling the trigger. When we ask them how they found out about us, they'll say things like, my mom told me, or my sister told me, my wife told me about it. But they're very comfortable going online, putting their credit card information in and pulling the trigger. And guys, more than ever, have been given the okay to groom and have been given the okay to take care of themselves in a non kind of froofy metro way. And that's super exciting, especially kind of like this millennial guy. He's buying that green juice. He has a gym membership. He's working out. He's going to like these influential dinners at night. He leads this kind of very on the go active person lifestyle. And the natural extension after he takes care of his mind and his body in his health is to take care of his skin.
How do you learn how to be an entrepreneur, Mia? I mean, clearly you have some educational training. You interviewed a ton of entrepreneurs as your profession for a while, but what are you bringing? What do you find yourself utilizing of yourself more and more as you develop this business? And where is that sourced?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I can answer it by saying the fact that I asked many entrepreneurs, as you rightly pointed out, when I was at Forbes TV and at Bloomberg TV about how they did things and asked those really kind of insightful questions and then following up. So I'm constantly asking questions to our customers, to our investors of, why this? How do you use this? Why? One of the biggest insights we had was that, guys, when they take a shower, they actually face the shower, the nozzle. So products need to be right to the right or to the left of them, easy for them to put on their head and wash off. Whereas women are taking showers facing away from the nozzle so that their hair can drip down their back. And as a result, most of these women are bending down to get their product rather than reaching out for their product. They have to they're bending down and they feel very comfortable doing that, which was one of the biggest insights we had. So it kind of informed how we should create our packaging. And that's just one example. But I overall believe that you can't teach entrepreneurship. I think there are ways to be a good entrepreneur and a bad entrepreneur, but I believe that it's somewhat innate, this idea of like risk-taking. I mean, I had a great career. I was on camera. Many would say I had a very glamorous life. I definitely had a very, I was very deep in and I thought I was going to do that for a long time. And there are a variety of reasons for why I left, but the one big one was that I wanted to build something from scratch and I wanted to have ownership over it. It had less to do with the schedule. It definitely had nothing to do with work-life balance because I have probably the worst schedule I've ever had. And I used to work for an investment bank. But I like the fact that the buck stops with me and, you're not going to work harder for anyone else but yourself.
Speaking of the buck, how has this venture been financially for you and your business partner so far in its infancy? Be honest with us too, because we see, for example, if we Google Oars and Alps, we see tons of articles, we see a beautiful website, we sense that there's a lot of customers and you're definitely in the growth stage. Financially, are you happy?
That's a great question. I will tell you, when I first started it, financially, I was not in the best position. I have, you know, for the mantra I grew up with was make your own money, take care of yourself, don't rely on guys. Don't ever, ever rely on guys. And to this day, my husband and I have not merged our bank accounts because I always felt like I needed to have my own financial security and my own financial freedom. And it had nothing to do with, you know, whether or not I loved him or not. And I love him a lot. But it was just because I wanted to have my own kind of security, nest, so to speak. And when I left Bloomberg TV, I was no longer making an income, and I made a great income there. And all of a sudden, I went from not being able to, you know, spend, you know, like $500 each on a DVF dress, or, you know, buying like the best shoes out there. I actually had to downgrade my wardrobe to more of a startup wardrobe. But the hardest thing for me starting a business was asking my husband to transfer me money so I could pay my credit card bill. And I'm not proud of that, but that is kind of what I have to do. Now, my credit card bill is definitely not what it was when I was making my own money. But, and I find myself often doing things like, oh, you know, most of it's like for Amazon for the kids. Cause I, as most women, I control, you know, like I run the household in terms of buying things to make this house move, from toilet paper to, you know, men's moisturizer for my husband. But that was the hardest thing, was knowing that, I would need a little bit, you know, infusion to kind of get the company going. And I would have to rely heavily on my husband, for someone who feels very strongly that, you know, women should, take care of them.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school, and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
Solves.
Interesting. Whatever suits couples. I also believe in having your own bank account. Maybe you also merge some accounts, but women, men should always have their own individual accounts. It allows for more autonomy and, like you said, financial freedom. Did your husband, was he surprised that you wanted to have such a division of the finances? Did you guys ever have differences over that?
a lot of it goes back to, you know, I think, the answer is like, he's super supportive, right? So for him, I think it's annoying for him to transfer me, you know, a couple thousand bucks here and there so I can pay for things for, you know, our children. But he understands that, you know, I'm pretty independent and I feel very strongly that way. you know, to just give you a little bit further detail, like my 401ks, and I've got them in two separate accounts, those are completely separate from him as well. And I feel very comfortable doing that. I feel very comfortable having a sense of, you know, what's in my account. It feels like it's mine. I guess my entire life, I feel like this is mine. I don't want to, you know, we're joint, but I don't want to be the beneficiary of someone else's hard work. Like, I want my hard work to be the money I use when I buy things.
I like that. I don't want to be the beneficiary of someone else's hard work. I might tweet that later.
Well, tweet away.
Now, you know, we've transitioned nicely here. Let's talk a little bit about your, so I guess that could be a good financial philosophy. I don't want to be the beneficiary of anyone else's hard work. I'm going
to, I think I came to that because, you know, my mom, when she came here from India, you know, she was a professor. She gave that up to follow my dad, her husband, to the States. She gave up this great job, and she relied heavily on my father to, you know, for everything. And sometimes that involved, you know, asking questions or, you know, asking permission. And I just never wanted that. And no one ever said to me, like, be financially independent, but I just picked up on that, that was important to me.
As we do most things from our parents, they don't ever actually articulate it, but they, through their actions, we learn 99% of, you know, right from wrong. Let's talk about your childhood a little bit, since we kind of migrated to family. Tell us a little bit about your biggest money memory as a young girl growing up, and tell us where you grew up, and did you have siblings, and what were you surrounded by?
Sure. So, born and raised California, was born in LA, and my family moved up to Northern California, an hour east of San Francisco. I come from a very small agricultural town called Tracy. And
I know it well. My parents are in Pleasanton right now, and Tracy's not too far.
Oh my gosh, we're neighbors. Yes, yeah. It's like 25 minutes away. The best gift my parents ever gave us was an education. So they were pretty stingy on most everything else, except when it came to things that had to do with education. So I always got new books. They felt like buying a used book was setting me up to not kind of have like a good karma. So they never let me get a book that was already underlined or highlighted. They always, you know, one of my best memories is going to Staples, and I was allowed to get whatever I want from Staples. But, you know, if I went to Macy's, I wasn't allowed to get whatever I wanted.
Right,
but
right.
Staples, I could get like whatever, you know, notebooks or pens or whatever I wanted.
Was there always, so was there pressure to excel to the point where, you know, you went to MIT, your sister, you said Harvard. Did you always feel like that's where you had to end up?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is very true for a lot of, you know, my parents were immigrants. So like I'm first generation, so to speak. And I think, they knew that that was the foundation for success, regardless of what I did. You know, getting into a good school was very important to them. And, you know, again, you kind of just like pick up on that as a kid. You know, I remember like being in seventh grade and telling everybody that I was going to go to Stanford. And then, you know, when it came time to applying there, I was like, nope, this is way too close to home, too close to Tracy. And, you know, you asked me a question about my earliest money memory, and I was just ruminating on it. And it had to be the fact that I realized early on, maybe when I was 8, that everyone else, that I was getting gypped, that everyone else had an allowance except me. So I remember creating this chart, and I got out my ruler and like my dad's ballpoint pen, and creating like a chart that I posted in the hallway that said all of the weeks that they, you know, on the horizontal side, I had the dates, and then I had, the amount on the left hand, my sister's name and my name on the Y axis, so to speak. And, I said, you know, these are all the times that I want to get paid my allowance. And because you haven't paid it for the past, you know, 4 months, I want to get back, you know, I want to get prorated these 4 months. And I remember them thinking, they were like, no, we're not going to give you an allowance. Like, you should make the case for what you need and why you need it. And then we can decide. So again, early on, I learned that you have to ask permission to get money, which is interesting. And maybe that influences kind of the decision of why, you know, my bank account is very separate from
but
my husband.
Always the engineer. I mean, you're talking charts and graphs and, you know, Y-axis. And
I know, cool. I'm a big dork. I can't help it. I'm not like the type of person who can like financially model and it looks like they're playing the piano. Like my husband, when he financially models, it's like, whoa, what are you building? But I do like to document things. Yeah, I guess that's how I think.
All right. So tell us how you maybe have thought wrong in one case or another as you were developing the business, a failure that was unexpected, and how you coped with it.
Oh gosh, I feel like there's so many to pick from. I'd say probably one of the biggest failures that we had was that we didn't initially realize how powerful the female is in our company, and that we should have gone forward with that. When I say that, is initially we were all about men, and targeting men. And what we, even though we knew, like I started the company for my husband, and so did Laura, we were doing that, and we weren't talking to enough females about kind of how they were involved in the purchase process and how they thought about what products to buy. And I mention this only because women are very, very price conscious. So they care a lot more about kind of what price points they want to spend, especially if they're thinking about what price points they want to spend on their husbands. Men are very new to the world of grooming. So when you give them a price of a product, like we A/B tested different pricing, they don't know that $18 is expensive for a deodorant, or, $22 is expensive for a deodorant. Our deodorant is 12 bucks. So when we tell them things, they don't know, but a woman can be like, oh my gosh, I'm getting ripped off. And we didn't pay enough attention to the, that women are more value oriented. And so that's going to, because women are so influential in men's purchases. So I'd say that was an error that we quickly fixed on, which is, making sure that women are now part of our focus groups, rather than just men.
And as you mentioned, they're the biggest promoters of your product. They're the ones telling the men to enter their credit cards.
Totally. But yet our focus groups were all structured around men.
Yeah.
Even though we knew that women are very much, buying the products or, leading their guide to that direction, we just didn't think it was worthwhile to get them all in a room or, give them surveys and get, do some ethnographic research with women. But we are now changing that because, and it goes great with our, why we started this, two women starting a men's grooming company. So I think we were overly relying on, the pain points that Laura and myself had.
Right. The company has been dubbed, the Warby Parker of men's grooming. And so certainly you're probably taking pages out of these successful companies' books, the ones that have paved the way for other startups. But in what ways is Oars and Alps writing its own rules?
It's a great question. I'd say one of the big things that has been really helpful to us is we don't view ourselves as a skincare company. I truly think we are a company that celebrates movement, and we are a company, a high performance athleisure brand. And it just so happens that we're doing skincare. And I say that for a couple of reasons. The first is, I don't want anyone to ever feel like they're buying a product because they've got dry skin and we're the solution to their dry skin. I want people to feel like by using our product, they can go and continue to achieve their goals and kind of continue to go down this amazing path and journey that they're already on. And so we're very much selling an emotional experience and not a functional one. And why that's interesting is a lot of the way that men shop and a lot of the way that brands have catered to men is men have a problem and this is a solution. And we kind of think that that's not the right way to think about it. That if you're looking for a solution, there are other brands that can cater to you. We're giving you something that's not, we wouldn't consider it a solution. It's something that is a partner to you as you go on this journey. So a lot of that is, seen in the way we write our copy, the way we send these curated emails, the way we even segment in our emails. We've got 100 different segmentations, so not everyone's getting the same email. In fact, we've got on any day, we've got 10 different emails going out to different kinds of customers. So that's part of how we think about, growing this brand in the online channel.
Yeah, it sounds like you're leaving the door open for a lot of growth. Do you have employees or is it just you and Laura?
We've got, so that's great. So we're a small team. We're about four people. I'm focused on kind of behind the scenes and the operations of the business. Laura very much was a senior marketer at Facebook, and she focuses on marketing. We have a head of creative who does all of our photography, social media, influencer, ambassador programs, PR. We've got a former chemist who used to work at Kiehl's who helps with the product development and creating our formulations. We are quickly hiring, so if anyone wants to work at Auras and Alps, it's jobs@aurasandalps.com. That is my shameless plug. We're looking for exceptional people to join our team on the operational side and the marketing side. And we've got a team of interns that have been great as well. So we're quickly growing. We just raised, we are in the process of like hopefully closing our seed round. And so that will allow us to be a lot more flexible going forward.
Interesting concept, raising money. How are you balancing the funding of the company so that you're not taking in so much from investors that you're beholden to their needs as opposed to what's best for the company?
Oh gosh, Farnoosh, that is such a good
in 10
question.
Seconds.
Oh my God. No, I know. And it's like, at first we didn't want to raise money from anyone. And then we realized that, it probably made sense to raise money just to kind of get to the growth and scale we wanted to get at. I personally think that any investor who's not willing to take a call from me on a Friday night when they're out with their wife or their husband at 10 p.m. for me to give them the good news, the bad news, and the really, really, can I say the word shitty? Shitty, ugly news.
Yes.
are people that I don't want to be part of. I'm all about transparency. I'm all about openness. Taking money, again, this is someone who doesn't share their bank account with someone else, is very hard. It's a very hard ask. It's something I don't take lightly. I've turned down more money because I didn't feel like they were the right partner. Mm-hmm. For instance, for every investor out there, anyone who asked me why two women are starting a men's grooming brand, I looked at them and I thought, yep, not taking your money.
Yeah.
And I knew, and this was like one of the first questions they would ask us. And it got kind of comical how many times men would ask us this question.
Hmm.
No one ever asked like Farnoosh, did you know that Victoria's Secret was started by a guy?
No. What?
I mean,
you're
yeah.
lying. Well, no, I can kind of understand that. I mean, what guy wouldn't want to surround himself with lingerie models?
Right. Well, there you go. But you think like Victoria started it. I don't even know where Victoria came from, but like, no.
It's Victor's Secret, actually.
Exactly. There you go. I mean,
that's as funny as I'll get today, by the way. That just happened. That's the best joke I'll give all week.
Maybe you should.
And you teed me up. That wasn't even really my joke. It was waiting there for me to say it.
Teamwork, my friend.
Yep.
Teamwork.
So that's a good litmus test. Yeah. Because if they're asking that, then they probably haven't done any homework.
Totally. And like, it's so crazy that, you talk to any woman and they'll tell you that like either they're trying to get their husband to use moisturizer or their husband's currently using their moisturizer or like they're dragging them into the Bloomingdale's counter or into, another, store to buy these products. So it's very much, I mean, it's no surprise. Like we are the gatekeepers to their face.
Yes.
And to the bathroom.
Well,
like,
on
do you
that
buy
note,
toilet paper? Like, are you buying toilet paper?
Yes. Amazon has me down for a lot of products these days, and toilet paper, paper towels, detergent. It's no matter how I think successful women become in the corporate world, in the professional world, domestically, there's still some things that just gravitate towards our domain. And it's not like I'm resentful of the fact that I have to go on Amazon and buy toilet paper. It is what it is. And the sooner if I do it, it just means it'll get done sooner.
And you're going to get
efficiently.
Like double ply, right?
Exactly.
My husband's getting double ply. Tim you're is, getting like yeah. airport quality.
Tim is not allowed to buy toilet paper actually because of that reason. I've gotten burned buns too many times.
Hopes. I totally agree. Yeah.
On that note, Mia Saini Dutchnowski, thank you so much for coming on the show. And after all these years, it's so lovely to reconnect and just really impressed with where you've taken your life and your business. And Tim is already a fan of Auras and Alps. And I have a son. And when he gets a little bit older, maybe we'll introduce him
as well. He's going to take to the Auras also. That's our whole phrase.
Take
to the Auras.
Oh, okay. Like that. Take to the Auras.
Essentially, like if things aren't going your way, life's not giving you what you want, you just take to the Auras and figure it out yourself.
Perfect. You've thought of everything. You literally have thought of everything. Mia, thank you so much and wishing you and your partner, your business partner, continued success.
Have a great one, Farnoosh. Thank you so much for having me on.
thanks so much to Mia for stopping by. If you'd like to learn more about Oars and Alps, check them out at oarsandalps.com. And the company is on Twitter at Oars and Alps. Mia is on Twitter at Mia Saini, S-A-I-N-I. If you missed any of this, just hop over to somoneypodcast.com and you can download the audio, the transcript. You can also leave me a question for the Friday episodes of Ask Farnoosh. Just click on Ask Farnoosh at the top right corner of somoneypodcast.com. And we'll get in touch. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.